Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Don't Cross That Red Line show.
We need to see it first.
Our salute to drawing boundaries and trying to enforce those boundaries. This has been a real quandary for our federal government, and we at Health Matters, so there are a few boundaries that we wanted to talk about here.
Are you fixing to put some new rules on me?
No, absolutely not. I'm actually looking at people who are trying to make rules and how they are doing on making those rules. That's the idea. It's a pretty vague topic, you got to say. But I bet you anything,
they're using red tape to make them.
Don't cross that red tape. I like it. So you take your red tape and you mark off an area, I guess, with it. With me from the University of Kentucky, my alter ego, the man who calls me out when I'm running overtime.
Tony, did you get anything wrong last week?
You know, we'll just have to see, won't we? That's one of the problems with this show is that Rick and I sit here in the studio, we record it, and then sometimes I am shocked to see what we actually said. And I've said this before, but Rick, when he says something funny, I don't laugh because I am looking for the next article, and sometimes these things are extremely hilarious, and I do appreciate that. But right now, I would appreciate it if you would talk to them about our online presence.
Oh, I thought you'd say not be funny for a second.
Yeah, please.
You know, you can get the audio of the shows at wmky.org. At that location, you can find a little bit of information about each show. There's a little show summary. There's 5, 6, sometimes as many as 8 shows listed there you can go back and listen to. Certainly go to WMKY.org and listen to the show whenever maybe you missed Health Matters. Maybe you heard the first part. Maybe you heard the last part. Maybe you heard it all and want to hear it again. It's right there. All you got to do is go download it and listen to it. There's also links to iTunes there where you can download it off of iTunes as a podcast. It'll be delivered directly to your iPhone or whatever podcatcher software you use. So, again, there's wmky.org. Now, if you want to get interactive with Health Matters and you'd like to send us some comments, send us some feedback, request a show topic, see what we have to say, see if there's any information we may have uncovered about a show or a topic in the show, or possibly something in healthcare that's going on that we feel like commenting about that may or may not make the show. Go to facebook.com/HM Radio Show, or you can do a search on the Facebook website for HM Radio Show or Health Matters Radio Show, and you should be able to find our page there. Certainly would hope you'd go out there and like us. Again, facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
We'd like to thank our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Our sponsor is Parkinson's Disease, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, Parkinson's Disease. There's a whole lot of shaking going on, according to Jerry Lee Lewis, and also to people with Parkinson's disease. Now, the reason Parkinson's disease made the disease of the month this month is because Michael J. Fox.
Isn't that amazing what he's getting ready to do?
He is getting ready to start a TV series in the fall.
A sitcom.
Yeah, a sitcom. And it will be, I would assume, difficult. It will be a real stress for him, but he's going to try it. The celebrities with Parkinson's disease include Michael J. Fox, Muhammad Ali, obviously we remember has some classic symptoms of Parkinson's disease, Bob Hoskins from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He retired
because was he the police detective?
Parkinson's disease. Yes, he was the detective who was supposed to find out who framed Roger Rabbit. Linda Ronstadt retired due to Parkinson's.
Did she really?
She said, and I'm quoting her now, "I now understand that no one can sing with Parkinson's disease, no matter how hard you try. And in my case, I can't sing a note." She was interviewed by the AARP and made that quote.
Wow.
Others, Jim Backus, you remember him as Thurston Howell III on Gilligan's Island. Adolf Hitler had Parkinson's. Vincent Price, Billy Graham, Pope John Paul II. Our top 10 fun facts about Parkinson's disease. Number one, nearly 1 million people in the U.S. are living with it. Fun fact number two, it's uncommon in people younger than 40. The incidence of the disease increases rapidly over age 60, and the average age is around 70 at diagnosis. And again, that makes Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali extremely young at diagnosis. I would say Hitler as well, and, well, Hoskins and Ronstadt were probably less than 70. Parkinson's primarily affects the part of the brain that controls movement and coordination. As the disease progresses, a person is unable to control movement normally. And then there are really 4 primary motor signs of Parkinson's disease, the things that we look for as physicians. One is the tremor, the classic shaking tremor of hands, also side-to-side movement of the head, the jaw, the face, and you can have a tremor of the legs as well. Sometimes it's intermittent early on or one-sided, but then it comes further. The second one is bradykinesia, slowness of movement. I had a patient of mine he played the guitar. And the first thing he noticed was that he could not play the tempo that he wanted to. He could not strum the chords as fast as he used to. Simply could not make his hands move as fast. Now, as a diagnostician, I could not find any tremor. I was unable to show rigidity and movement problems with him, but he had already noticed himself that he was not able to move as fast as before. The third one is rigidity or stiffness of the legs and trunk. Oftentimes, when they walk, they keep their arms stiff at their side rather than swinging them normally. And then D is postural instability, impaired balance and coordination. And I still remember an elderly woman in my church. It was Communion Sunday. She was going to get up and go to the front to take communion. She was unable to stand up. Her family tried to help her. And, Rick, it looked like the Marines at Iwo Jima raising the flag. This family were trying to get her upright and finally had to give up because she simply was not able to change her posture rapidly.
Wow.
So those are our four primary motor signs. Again, the tremor, the slowness of movement, the rigidity or stiffness, and the postural instability, unable to assume a standing position or change posture rapidly. Those are some of the motor signs.
Do you remember the movie Awakenings?
Yes.
I remember that those patients were essentially catatonic. You know, they were very, basically three of the four things you just named, and they're very extreme. And he gave them a drug, and I guess that was based on a true story.
It was. The difference with Parkinson's is that although
But he gave them a Parkinson drug, didn't
he? I don't know that for sure, but I think you're right on that.
L-DOPA, I think is what they called it.
That is definitely a Parkinson's drug. I had forgotten that. The difference, Parkinson's is not a, it by itself does not affect your thinking, your mental abilities.
Right.
Only the, especially early on in the disease, only your ability to move, which is very frustrating. But you're right. There is a type of dementia called dementia with Lewy bodies that involves symptoms like this plus changes in thinking. But these people had an entirely different syndrome altogether.
Yeah, yeah. It reminded me, the three things you said reminded me of that movie and how he was able to give them they didn't have Parkinson's, but he gave them a Parkinson's medicine and kind of brought them out of that state for a while.
Yeah, it does. And the medicines for Parkinson's, what they try to do is either block the breakdown of transmitters that the nerves use or release more of those transmitters.
Right.
Or in the case of L-DOPA, to use the medicine as a transmitter to try to improve the connections between the nerves. It's really dicey business. You can see Michael J. Fox, I'm sure, has the best health care available for Parkinson's disease and yet still has difficulty in controlling movements. We'll talk more about Parkinson's disease in our second fractional portion. That's our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, Parkinson's disease. There's a whole lot of shaking going on.
So what kind of wonderful topic did you bring to the show this week?
Well, we're talking about red lines. That is, people making decisions and determinations that they're going to enforce. And I thought one of the more interesting ones, this was from Modern Healthcare, August 29th, UPS and Walmart have decided that the e-cigarettes, the electronic cigarettes, are an unhealthy habit rather than a stop smoking tool. And they are imposing tobacco use penalties on employees who use them. That is, if you use an e-cigarette, in the eyes of UPS and Walmart and many other businesses, you are a smoker, not a person who is on nicotine replacement. And when you pay for your insurance, you will be charged the smoker's rate. You'll be charged smoker's surcharges.
Is that fair? Is that a fair assessment? I mean, e-cigarettes are designed to be a cigarette replacement.
Right. And they may help people get off cigarettes. As a matter of fact, there is some evidence that they may be able to do that. But you're absolutely right. They are, in fact, sort of the one interpretation. They're like the methadone maintenance of smoking. That is, you continue to smoke. You just smoke something that hopefully safer than cigarettes.
Right. I mean, it's snacking with broccoli on a diet.
Right.
Instead of French fries.
Well, that's what you would think. They would argue, no, in fact,
you're still snacking
synthetic French fries, I guess, or something. I don't know how to use your analogy.
I'm trying to dig into what was their intent. Why on earth would you put forth this policy? Hopefully they explain that.
Spokeswoman for UPS confirmed the company's health plan would begin charging a monthly fee of $150 a month in 2014 to employees who use tobacco products, including e-cigarettes. FDA testing, she said, has determined that various samples of e-cigarettes have carcinogens and other toxic chemicals. They are not proven to be safe. So they are basing the surcharge on the fact that e-cigarettes have not been proven to be safe rather than they have been proven to be dangerous. They have the potential to be dangerous, and the FDA has not made a final determination. So in the meantime, these large corporations have decided to treat them like cigarettes.
No pun intended, but I think the smoke has cleared for me,
okay,
Tony. Clearly, people who smoke e-cigarettes didn't just start at age 16 smoking e-cigarettes. These are people that have probably been either smokers most of their life, or you know they've had a bout with smoking and they've gotten off of them through the e-cigs, right? So what's going to happen with their health care? I mean, what do we say? It takes about 10 years for the real risks and impacts of smoking to kind of mitigate themselves after you stop smoking?
Right.
So these people, more than likely, are still – I mean, to me, this is the insurance company doing a money grab, trying to account for the fact that these people are probably still going to have increased health costs.
Well, and those increased health costs, if you look at the possibilities – and again, this is kind of the worst-case scenario – since the Affordable Care Act does allow insurance companies to charge smokers more, smokers could pay as much as $2,000 a year extra because of the surcharge, and that would include e-cigarette smokers. Now, you ask why, and there was that explanation from the UPS spokeswoman. But I will tell you, the bottom line is there is a consultant group that consults on benefits. They're called Towers Watson, and they have advised all their clients to take that stance on e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes have not been tested for safety. Nobody knows what the ingredients really are. They've not been approved as a recognized and safe method for cessation, like other nicotine replacement patches, the gum. No data has been collected, and so there are too many question marks about e-cigarettes. And if they've been manufactured by the tobacco companies, and let's face it, they do not have a good reputation, the tobacco companies, about what's in their products, can we trust them?
Again, I think you got to follow the money. Some of this stuff, you got to follow the money. And to me, this seems like, I mean, I'm not saying they're wrong, Tony. I'm not suggesting they're wrong in any way, but they probably have some insight here that tells them from a financial standpoint that people who do smoke e-cigs still have increased health care costs.
Probably within the next month, the FDA will come out with a proposed set of regulations on e-cigarettes. If they label e-cigarettes as tobacco use, then Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act will allow health insurers to charge extra. Companies have already made up their mind with their benefits programs, but the insurance companies will weigh in after the FDA decides their stance on e-cigarettes. I'm mentioning this to our radio fans just to let you know that e-cigarettes right now, although I have seen some people employing them, as you mentioned, as a way to try to get off regular cigarettes, as a way to lower their risk of some of the complications of smoking, it looks like that's not going to play well in the corporate world, trying to substitute e-cigarettes for regular cigarettes. Be aware that there may be some extra fees coming your way if you decide to switch to e-cigarettes. They are not considered at the present time the same as other forms of nicotine replacement.
Well, you should switch to them for different reasons. If they are end up being safer than regular cigarettes, then absolutely use them to get off of regular cigarettes. But by all means, the best possible way is just to quit smoking.
Speaking of the best possible way for you is to quit listening to the radio, at least for a few minutes, take a break, and come back for our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is a second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Don't Cross That Red Line show.
Uh-oh.
You know, we're trying to do a health educational show.
We just did it.
And that is not helping
out. Did I cross the line, Tony?
I'm going to change the name of the show for the third time. Because I'm not going to put up with this sort of stuff.
Huh? You've been putting up with this for 500 shows. You're not going to stop next week.
Our sponsor for today's show, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, Parkinson's disease, in honor of Michael J. Fox starting a fall series, a noted sufferer of Parkinson's disease. Now, I want you to remember from last time the primary motor signs. You get a tremor of your hands, your arms, legs, face, and your jaw. It may not be noticeable at first. It may be one-sided, but the tremor progresses as time passes. You get slowness of movement. Remember, I had a guitarist who was disturbed by the fact he could not play the guitar as fast as he used to. There is a rigidity or stiffness of the limbs and trunks. Oftentimes, a person will not be able to swing their arms as they walk normally. And then finally, postural instability. It is very difficult to rise to a standing position or to sit down or to turn to a different direction. I'm up to fun fact number 5. The cause is unknown. There's no cure. The treatment options, there is both medication and surgery to manage symptoms. Number 6, medication costs for an individual can range around $2,500 a year. Surgery up to $100,000 per individual. This is not a cheap disease to treat. Number 7, and this is a problem, psychosis with hallucinations occurs in 20 to 40% of drug-treated patients with Parkinson's disease. And part of it is those are older people, and
right.
you are using medications that alter the function of their brain. But hallucinations, visual hallucinations, are very common in people who have Parkinson's disease and are taking medications. The prevalence and severity increase over time, unfortunately. Fun fact number 8, sleep disorders affect over 3/4 of people with Parkinson's disease. Sleep difficulty ranked as one of the most troublesome symptoms other than the tremor in a survey of patients with early and late stage disease.
Don't you think eating would be kind of a real troublesome area too?
Well, it does. Late in the disease, you have more problems swallowing. And so it can not only be troublesome, it also can be very life-threatening. To not be able to swallow adequately.
I don't know. My grandmother, I don't think she had Parkinson's. I'm pretty sure she didn't. But I know she had a really bad shake the last 2 or 3 years of her life. And I know it was always so difficult for her to eat. I can only imagine that must be very difficult.
Fact number 9, in one study, the proportion of patients with Parkinson's disease who were severely disabled or dead within 5 years was around 1/4. 2/3 at 5 to 9 years, 80% at 10 to 14 years. That is, this is a progressive disease that in many cases will lead to death. There is a small group of patients that had slow progression, and they lack severe disability even at greater than 20 years. And again, we hope, especially due to his young age, that Michael J. Fox will be in that group.
Right.
I am not certain. I do not believe that you can predict that at the outset. Only time will tell you. And so I am hoping that one of the reasons he's doing this show is that he may have noted a stability to his disease that allowed him to do it.
I tell you, his passion for his disease must be incredible to want to do this and want to bring light to it and engage the public through doing a situational comedy like this. I just can't imagine. There were lots of columns, Tony, written about him doing movies when he was back doing the mainstream movies and having to take breaks in between the filmings. And I think there was one where he was in the mayor's office. I forget the name of the sitcom, but he was working as the mayor's.
Spin City, I think.
Yeah, Spin City. He was the deputy. And there were a lot of discussion on how hard that was for him to take a break and leave the set and come back 2 hours later, or, try to gather himself. So I can only imagine how hard this has to be on him.
Now, we've given you some time to chew on fun fact number 9. Again, 80% mortality at 10 to 14 years. But keep in mind, it's diagnosed in the 70s.
Right.
So actually, some patients can live 20 to 30 years. Most studies suggest that there is an increased mortality for Parkinson's disease. But if you diagnose a disease in people in their 70s, the 80% mortality, although it sounds horrendous, actually is not that far off from what their mortality would be without it. So there is an increased mortality, but it is not Parkinson's itself does not in young people necessarily cause them an accelerated death.
But in the elderly patients, if a patient who has Parkinson's suffers a fall, not necessarily probably related to the Parkinson's or the motor skills, and they had complications from a hip surgery or something like that, is that a statistic? How would that get categorized as far as, does it get labeled back to the Parkinson's?
No. As a cause of death, it will be a complication of a fall, but you would not attribute the fall to Parkinson's necessarily because they may have tripped over a rug. Now, maybe the Parkinson's made them more likely to trip, but you would not attribute it to the rug or to the Parkinson's. You would say they had a fall.
Right.
So in terms of a cause of death, and that might wind up being a pneumonia or a blood clot resulting from surgery, resulting from a fall.
Right.
But going back and say, we know the Parkinson's led to the fall, so ultimately caused death. On a death certificate, when we're talking about that type of statistics, no, that would not be a death due to Parkinson's disease. That is our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease is Parkinson's disease. Now, Rick, this was an article that I had a lot of fun with. I took this, and I apologize to those who also listened to The Front Page with Chuck Mraz. A couple weeks ago, I took this on The Front Page, and Chuck and I had a lot of fun with it, and I thought you would enjoy this as well. It is especially a good article for fall football season because it talks about what happens to people who watch football, their health. And so I think that's a very reasonable thing. This is a guy named Jan Cornille, who's a PhD candidate at a graduate business school in Paris. And he is actually it's a business school, and he is interested in food and food psychology. They had surveys of Americans' eating habits, and they took Americans who were in major metropolitan areas. They were in areas that had an NFL franchise.
Right.
They looked at their eating habits on Sunday. They looked at them on Monday and on Tuesday. And then they looked at whether their team won or lost and whether or not they beat the point spread. That is, whether they were expected to win or lose.
So can I stop you? Were these confirmed fans of that city's NFL team, or are they just people who live in a city that have an NFL team? Because, there can be a distinction, Tony. Sometimes, there's people who don't necessarily watch Sunday football and they just happen to live in a city with a football team. So I would be interested to know.
Right. They said, we chose NFL games because of their popularity. 59% to 64% of Americans declared being football fans.
So they had a higher percentage of getting somebody who would fit the bill.
And that's why they chose football. But they actually randomly chose people in these metropolitan areas. They went further. If there were two teams, they assumed people would support the more established team, the Giants over the Jets, the 49ers over the Raiders. Again, you can argue whether or not, obviously for some people that wouldn't work, but that's what they set up. They threw out New Year's Eve, Thanksgiving, Christmas contests. They focused on Sunday football only.
You know, if they were going to do a random study like that, did you say they just threw them out?
Yeah. They said, we're only going to study Sunday games.
No, I mean, did they throw out the two-team towns?
Oh, no.
See, they should have just thrown out the whole town because you just at random, you'll never know.
Well, but if it is, let's say, well, it would be hard to say. If the Giants and the Jets both lost, they'd be okay.
Correct.
If the Jets won and they're basing their results on the Giants, then, in fact, they would underestimate the effects.
Right, right. Because, that's what I'm saying. They should just throw out the two-team towns.
Well, they wound up with 475 games, 30 teams, and they looked at food consumption. People average age 38 years. About half of them were male, half of them female. It was a market research company that had done these food consumption by day for several years. And so they just pulled that data and looked at it. And what they found was interesting. Whether your team wins or loses, you're going to probably eat the same stuff on Sunday. You know, okay. You're going to prepare the right food for the game. You're going to tailgate, or you're going to sit down with your friend's house, or you're not going to pay attention at all. But you're going to do that on Sunday. On Tuesday, this is the middle of the week.
Right.
You don't worry about what happened this weekend. But on Monday, after their home football team lost, people ate 10% more calories and 16% more saturated fat compared to their typical days. If their home team won, they ate slightly fewer calories and less saturated fat.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. You know, the thing is, part of me wants to put a really weird spin on this because I watch football. I don't have a favorite team. I have teams that I kind of have liked over the years, and I don't live in one of the cities that have an NFL team, so obviously that's not a big deal. But I feel the same way about fantasy football, and that could be any team, you know, because my fantasy football team is 9 players off of 9 different teams.
Now, do you think you're going to change your eating habits, say, if your running back doesn't start?
If I lose, what if I lose and I'm depressed? It's the same concept. It's win or lose. So, but the thing is, fantasy football is not over until Tuesday, so you'd have to do the fantasy study and look at the outcomes to correlate to this. You'd have to say Sunday, Monday are the same. Tuesday is when you see a difference with win-loss.
Well, I thought this was absolutely brilliant because they camped out on these daily food questionnaires. They found the NFL franchise cities, and they put this thing together from existing data, and they came out with an entirely new conclusion. Now, we've talked before about how sports affects populations.
Sure. It affects your happiness, your mental state.
And if your team loses, the rates of alcohol consumption and complications go up, domestic abuse goes up, car crashes go up. They have looked at Super Bowl teams that won or lost, and the losing team has a slight uptick in their rate of heart events, and the winning team has a slight drop. Now, the thing about it that I realize, though, is these are winning teams. Again, a team to get to the Super Bowl has won a lot of games. And what they found was there was no difference if the team was expected to lose by a large margin. So if you had a really bad team going against a really good team, the bad team, even though they lost, nothing really changed. But a close game, a game you thought you could win, a game where the point spread was, you know, 3-4 points, then that was the one where they actually
the next day you resorted to drinking and eating.
You basically had extra. Now, it goes into then if you have a losing team, and keep in mind, Rick, I spent 8 years at Vanderbilt, and during the 8 years I was there, they did not have good athletic teams. That's Vanderbilt. And so I never really worried about whether they won or lost. I don't think that that affected my eating habits at all. But you take a UK basketball game, an Alabama football game, those people are at risk because they expect to win every game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, the people in Kansas City are safe.
Yeah. You know, you want it to break down by franchise. You really do. But they didn't do that. But they did do a second and a third part of the experiment. So now they've got an idea. They then recruited 78 French sports fans. Again, they were...
Well, there's when they really ran off the rails.
Yeah. Well, they asked them to write about a favorite team's victory or defeat, and most of them did choose a soccer team. Which makes sense.
Okay.
Now
this is getting less interesting.
After the writing task was over, they then worked on a word puzzle, during which time they could snack from a bowl of chocolate, a bowl of potato chips, a bowl of grapes, or a bowl of cherry tomatoes. And, you know, I'm thinking this, all right, I'm working a word search puzzle, and I'm snacking on a bowl of cherry tomatoes, and I am unhappy.
Only
this is not anything that I
so
like.
So did they assign them what they were getting?
No. You could choose.
You could choose. So did anybody not choose the chocolate?
Apparently, yes, apparently so. In general, if they wrote about a team defeat, they went for the chocolate and the chips. A lot more saturated fat and sugar. If they wrote about a team victory in their writings, they would go to the grapes or the cherry tomatoes.
Well, now, they should have had them write about something that's neither.
Okay.
A control group.
Now you're talking about the third experiment, which I absolutely love, and we'll talk about
that. Okay, let's do it.
But the second one, to me, I talk with some friends of mine, and there are actually people who would get a bowl of cherry tomatoes and sit down with a bowl of cherry tomatoes.
Really?
I'm sorry. That is so far outside.
I knock those things off my salad.
Well, I'll eat them if I have to, you know, to get to the other stuff. But, yeah, for the most part, I give mine to my wife who loves tomatoes, and she'll put hers on her salad. But even my wife who loves tomatoes does not sit and pop cherry tomatoes in her mouth from a bowl. This is strange, but apparently there are people who do that. Third phase.
Uh-oh, here we go.
160 French adults. They watched highlights from three different soccer matches. One, the French national team's big win over arch rival Italy. That was in 2000.
Okay.
The other, their heartbreaking loss to Italy in the 2006 World Cup final. Then the third group was a control video that had two Belgian teams, and who honestly cares about Belgian
soccer? Do they even have soccer in Belgium?
Yeah, well, it's debatable, but at any rate, they watched that. So you've got these. So one group of fans sees a stirring French victory.
You know,
from 2000.
Tony, though, they could have done the same thing in the first study, and they could have went to Canada and looked at a football game.
Yeah.
To compare it to the American football.
Same thing. But this was one from 2000. This was an old French victory, somewhat old French loss, and then the Belgian soccer team. Now, afterwards, they did a self-affirmation. They wrote about a core value in their life, such as their relation with their family, their friends. And then they looked at photos of the four bowls of food. And they said, how much do you think you would want to eat? You would want to eat a little bit? You want to eat half of it? You want to eat the whole bowl?
And the answer is... If it was the chocolate, the whole bowl.
It turned out that people tended to prefer junk food after they watched the defeat, their crushing defeat to Italy, except if they did the self-affirmation. If they looked at the relationship with their family and wrote something about that, then they would go for the vegetables.
Unbelievable. Vegetables now. What were the four choices?
Cherry tomatoes, the grapes. They went for the cherry tomatoes and grapes. All right.
Chocolate was one.
Yeah, chocolate and chips. So they went for chocolate and chips if they watched the loss, unless they did the self-affirmation. If you think about your friends and family after a crushing defeat and you count your blessings, you apparently will go for a bowl of cherry tomatoes.
See, I would think the grapes would be a nice compromise. They're fresh fruit, but they're also sweet like chocolate.
Yeah. But see, if you put a bowl of chocolate next to a bowl of grapes, I don't even see the grapes.
I can't.
All right. So, in other words, affirming your values prevents sports defeat from affecting your self-esteem. That's what they got from it.
So, basically, every day you should wake up and go, I love myself.
Not every day. It's the day after your team loses.
Well, but clearly, if it works on the day your team loses, it'll do better on the – I mean, it'll also help you when they don't.
So, here are some other tactics for combating emotional eating after your team loses. This is an exclusive from Health Matters. What happens when your
football team loses? Is one of them moved to a new city? Please tell me it is.
One, write down what you eat so you'll be aware of how your diet changes in response to stress. Now, this is a great idea. You're sitting there watching the game, and you're writing down what you eat while you watch the football game. Not going to happen.
No.
No. But, okay, I would say in general, though, if you just simply write down what you eat, that is a great diet tool. I have no problem with that. I think it's a little bit trouble during a sports victory or certain times, but that's one thing. The other one, think ahead. Have healthy snacks on hand if you know you're going to be in a stressful situation.
People won't come watch it with you.
Yeah, I know. That's
it's going to be very difficult to invite friends over if you tell them I'm going to put out a big bowl of cherry tomatoes.
But it brings out something, Rick, that I really hadn't ever thought of. Let's say, so you know you're going to be in a stressful situation. You've got a really tough interview coming up, got a disciplined employee or whatever, and so you put healthy snacks out because it's a stressful situation. That's odd to me. I understand it, but the idea of actually doing that and saying, well, what's my level of stress today? I better not bring junk food. What I do is, you know, I try to eat as healthy as I can all the time, and sometimes I break down, but I don't think about rearranging the room during stressful time so that I have healthier snacks. That's not the way I think of, oh, today's going to be a low-stress day so I can put out junk food. I don't think that way.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't either. I mean, matter of fact, I don't put food out at all for my stressful days. I usually go get it out of the refrigerator. So
right.
thing is, I got to keep my refrigerator empty when I think I'm going to lose.
That's fair enough. No food is fine. I just think the idea you manipulate the food depending on your level of stress is a strange thing.
Yeah, and you know, the respondents, this probably, you were talking about elevated percentages. That doesn't necessarily suggest everybody does that. It just means the human race has a tendency to do that.
Yeah, but you play the numbers. Apparently, enough people do to make a significant difference. So I figure it's something. And these bowls of cherry tomatoes things, I think that's strange. But here's the final thing. All right, so your team loses a key game in the conference or whatever. Try non-caloric stress relievers, such as taking a walk. Now, I will tell you, sometimes I get out and take a walk during an especially close athletic contest that I'm really worried about. A UK NCAA tournament game. I have to stop and just take a walk and come back.
I don't do that until after it's over.
I understand, but I do that sometimes. Soaking in a bubble bath.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Football fans. This message from Health Matters, why not fire up the bubble bath just in case your team...
You're going to need it this year.
That's absurd.
No, have you seen the team?
That is just... No, I know you're going to need something, but I just don't see a bubble bath. I do not think football fans are going to go for bubble bath as stress relief. And the last one, doing yoga. This is from Paris. What do you do when you have a rough football game, guys? Well, you need to soak in a bubble bath or try yoga to handle football depression. So, I don't know. I'm not sure. I know we're out of time, so I'm going to close out this segment. You've been listening to Health Matters.
Get yourself some cherry tomatoes.
That's right. Get a big bowl of cherry tomatoes for the third and final fractional portion. You're listening
Support
to Health
MSPR
Matters.
Comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is a third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Don't Cross That Red Line show. Our salute to standing up to people who use chemical weapons and also to some of the red lines in the health world.
We also talked about the red lines on a football field last time.
That's right. And the red bowl.
Actually,
of,
they're yellow. They're yellow.
Tomatoes, but never mind. Our sponsor for the last time, this is a Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, Parkinson's disease. Whole lot of shaking going on, says Jerry Lee Lewis. Just some of the key facts about Parkinson's disease. 1 million people in the U.S. living with Parkinson's disease. Uncommon in people under age 40, increases rapidly, and the average age at diagnosis is around 70. Primary signs of Parkinson's disease, tremor of the hands, arms, legs, jaw, and face. Sometimes there is a sensation, an inner sensation of tremor before you actually see it. Second one is slowness of movement. The third one, rigidity or stiffness of the limbs or trunk. They don't swing their arms normally when they walk. They tend to be stooped over. And then finally, what they call postural instability, impaired balance and coordination, a feeling like you're not upright and you can't quite figure out which way is up. There is a tendency to fall that Rick mentioned in our last fractional portion. A couple of other things to remember. Psychosis occurs in 20 to 40% of people who take medications, and it gets worse over time. And we talked about it. It's a little tricky. It does seem that there is an increased mortality in people with Parkinson's disease. The numbers are horrendous, 80% mortality at 10 to 14 years, but this is primarily a disease of older people. There are people who have stability, and Parkinson's disease itself appears to increase slightly your overall risk of dying. That's our sponsor, Parkinson's disease, the disease of the month. Now, we're talking about red lines, things we have to do, just to remind you that there will be biological weapons unleashed on your children this fall in the school system, and that is mainly the flu virus. It is time.
I thought you were going to say cherry tomatoes.
That's an interesting idea. I don't have a health tip about cherry tomatoes being unleashed on your kids, but I'll have to think about that, Rick. We'll do that next show. The American Academy of Pediatrics issued a policy statement recommending that children ages 6 months and older be immunized against influenza as soon as possible.
It is getting to be that time, isn't it?
It is. And I've advised several people. My advice, I always said, was to wait till October so you get immunity later on in the flu season. The American Academy of Pediatrics says you really need to get started now. As school season starts, influenza season starts, and so I am repeating their recommendations. Get vaccinated as soon as possible. There is a wide array of flu shots this year. 2 years ago, 42% of people got vaccine, and only half children ages 6 to 17 got vaccinated. We do recommend vaccination for children over age 6 months. As a matter of fact, everyone over age 6 months, including pregnant women, should get the flu shot, in our opinion. First of all, you've got what they call the trivalent flu shot, the standard flu shot, three strains of flu virus for people ages 6 months and up. For anybody who gets vaccinated, it is eligible. There is, this year, what they call a quadrivalent flu shot. They are churning it out. It may not be in all areas of the country in large amounts, but they added a fourth strain, a second strain of influenza B to this one. And influenza B is the one they have the hardest time matching up, so it ought to be a little better protection. Now, the experts are recommending you go ahead and get what you can get, but if they have a quadrivalent, a four-strain shot instead of a three-strain shot, they feel like that is a better deal. And hopefully by next year, the three-strain will go away and we'll only be using the quadrivalent shot.
And hopefully we'll increase our accuracy considerably.
Yeah, it's still a crapshoot because you have to guess 6 months ahead of time so you can grow the virus that is inactivated and used in the flu shot. So it's always a guess as what's happening, and especially B seems to change a lot, and they often miss that. But having an extra strain of B gives them an extra shot at it.
It'll be interesting to see if they can go back and look at the efficacy for the last, say, 15 years, and then over the next 15 years manage the four-strain efficacy and just see if it actually increased their efficacy.
Right. There, for people who don't like needles, there is Fluzone Intradermal. It uses a small needle that injects a vaccine into your skin rather than your muscle. Now,
that's like a TB skin test.
Yeah, it's like a TB skin test. It's still a needle. So I think it's unfair to say if you're afraid of needles. I mean, if you fear needles, it's not necessarily you fear needles that are longer than a certain length.
Well, let's be honest, Tony. We all have a bit of a fear for a really large needle.
Right.
I mean, these little TB ones, they're pretty harmless when you get down to it. But you start getting into one that they draw your blood with.
Yeah.
And it's like, ugh.
Right.
I don't like them.
This is available to adults ages 18 to 64, the intradermal vaccine. It's less of a stick. It's less of a needle. But it's still a needle. If you really don't like vaccine needles, then you've got the flu mist, the nasal spray. That's for people ages 2 to 49. It should not be used by pregnant women because it has a weakened virus rather than a kill virus.
Now, does it have multiple strains in it as well?
Yes. It actually has the quadrivalent this year. It's been updated. So that's a good thing. Flu mist is a good one. Then there is the Fluzone High Dose. Fluzone sounds kind of like a
red zone.
Immoral woman, I'm
thinking. It's like the red zone.
Yeah, you oftentimes try to go out with Fluzones. High-dose vaccine. This is mainly for people over age 65 to boost their immunity.
No, I don't.
I honestly, Rick, I don't know what to do with a high-dose vaccine. I am used to giving old people the standard vaccine, and I'm not sure who I would pick for that. Do I pick people who are sicker, people who are healthier, people who are more worried, less worried?
It sounds bad.
Yeah, it's an odd thing, isn't it? And then there's one called Flu Block. Available without, it was not grown in eggs. It's a recombinant vaccine. It's a good alternative for people with serious egg allergies, licensed for adults ages 18 to 49. And so that's your options. That's your possibilities. It is a good idea to get a flu shot this fall.
Something tells me we're going to be talking about flu shots a lot longer.
Absolutely. August 21st, Health Day News. Getting a flu shot might protect against a heart attack. They quoted an August 21st article in the journal Heart looking at more than 550 people, half of them recently hospitalized for a heart attack, the other half not. So they had about 275 people in each group, heart attack patients and not. It turned out 33% of the heart attack of patients had received a flu shot, 65% without a heart attack had received a flu shot. Now, this doesn't prove that flu shots prevent heart attacks, but what we do know is people who didn't have a heart attack were more likely to get their flu shot. There is a mechanism. If influenza creates an inflammatory state in your body, it might then precipitate a heart attack, and the flu shot then may give you some protection. It is certainly worth, I think, getting the vaccine for a bunch of reasons, but that may actually help.
But I do think one thing that we've been talking about for years and years and years, and I think we could finally, I think everybody agrees that, having an infection or something in your body that's not supposed to be there, I mean, your body goes into overtime trying to fix it. And that in itself, that process itself has a toll on the body. Right. So like gingivitis, for example, we walk around with gingivitis in our mouth. I think studies have shown that that causes all kinds of other health problems because you got an active infection.
Yeah. And so the idea then is if you are infected with the influenza virus, that then may lead to you being in a state where you're more likely to develop blood clots and a heart attack. Now, again, they did not try vaccinating half the people and following them. What they did was they looked at people who had a heart attack and people who didn't. Maybe the people who didn't were more healthy in other ways, but they certainly were more healthy and getting the flu vaccine. It's also reassuring. The flu vaccine obviously doesn't cause a heart attack because they were twice as likely to be vaccinated, the ones who didn't have it. Got one that I don't think anybody, this is not on your radar screen, but I wanted to make you aware of it. There is a new rule that took effect September 23rd, actually. It is a new version of HIPAA. HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, was supposed to safeguard your electronic information.
Right.
Rick, you remember.
Does it, except for your faxes.
Yeah. Rick has been skeptical of this, knowing that there are so many ways information can get out, but it's supposed to help. The new one that went into effect September 23rd strengthens patient privacy protections, provides new rights that you want to be aware of. First of all, you can ask for a copy of your electronic medical record. You've always been able to do that. Now you can ask for it in electronic form.
Nice.
They don't have to run off a bunch of papers and hand you basically a stack of papers so high. You can actually get it on some type of flash drive. You can get an electronic copy of your health
record. I would assume that's providing they have it.
Yeah.
They got one more year. Right?
That's true. That's true. But you can request it, and if they do have it in electronic form, you can get it in electronic form. Number two, I think, is the most interesting one in my mind. If you pay out of pocket in full for an episode of healthcare, you can instruct your provider to refrain from sharing information about your treatment with your health plan. Now, think about that for a minute. In other words, if your insurance company pays for your care, they get a copy of your records.
Right.
Whatever it is. If you pay cash, they don't. So this is a lot like car insurance. You know, basically sometimes you're in a wreck and you just work it out, pay cash, so that your insurance rates don't
never
go
know.
Up. Yeah. We've had, well, I'll just go ahead and tell it. This is a tricky thing to tell, but I'll just say it. We had many years ago at St. Clair, a man travel from another state with a bottle in his rectum.
Nice.
And he had to have surgery to get the bottle out of his rectum. How did the bottle get there? I'm going to leave that to our radio fans' imagination.
There were many stories.
Yes. But the reason he traveled across state lines and came to St. Clair was he felt there was no way that this would get back to anyone he cared about that he had had this unfortunate accident.
Unless they're listening to the radio right now.
Right. Now, well, obviously, I don't know the person's name. It was an event that happened and we just happened to be involved on. But the point is, then, if under the new electronic medical records, this would have been transmitted to his insurance company and would have been available for anyone taking care of him.
Right.
That he had this. And so
unless
he
pays cash, huh?
Now, under the new HIPAA Act, he could pay cash for that, and it would be considerable, but he could pay cash, and he could keep that off the record. And so you've got to think about this. This might really change the way you approach healthcare if you're able to keep things out of your medical record. Now, if you're homicidal, suicidal, if there's a threat to your life, I don't think that applies. I don't know the fine details of this, but I cannot see how people would not be made aware of something like that. But if there's something embarrassing, something that you did not want to have shared with other people, something that might affect your insurance rates in the future, you could actually have that cleared if you pay cash.
Boy, I tell you, Tony, I got to admit, from a technical standpoint, I'm a little skeptical that they can actually achieve that, because one cash payment for one episode, how is that going to mask lab tests and all the ancillary systems that feed into that record that then could be transmitted over to the health provider?
Well, you've got to think about this carefully, don't you?
I mean, from a technological standpoint, somebody's scratching their head going, oh, how do we do this?
Yeah.
Because there are going to be some things that are tough about that, I think. Now, maybe they just bulk all the stuff. Maybe they say, okay, well, we send it all to the healthcare provider, or we don't send it because we're not going to bill for it. Maybe it becomes that simple. But what about other requests for the information to share later on? Believe me, it opens up a whole host of technological problems on just how to manage that PHI data.
It could really get interesting. The final rule also prohibits sale of an individual's health information without their permission. You know, that's all I have as a summary. I am just baffled by that. I thought that was the whole purpose of the original HIPAA. The fact that they have to recodify that bothered me. Maximum penalty, $1.5 million per violation. This is very, very serious stuff. In fact, some healthcare entities actually have HIPAA insurance because these breaches come out.
Right.
And $1.5 million per violation can add up very quickly if you lose a laptop with several hundred names on it. That can be bad news. And the breach notification rule was amended. You have to determine the breach's risk of compromise rather than harm. That is, before, you would have to prove that someone was harmed. The information may be out there, but if there's no harm, then it was not necessarily.
Now all they have to do is prove it's been compromised.
Compromise is considered a more objective test than harm. Thus, breach notification is necessary in all situations except those where the covered entity or business associate demonstrates a low probability that it has been compromised. So it's a little bit easier now to prove a breach than it was when you had to prove harm.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And it's funny that it comes on the verge of the deadline for when electronic medical records are supposed to be in place, because there may be entire systems that have been put in the last year or so that may or may not be capable of handling these regulations. And right. so entire electronic medical record systems may have to be revamped or retooled to accommodate said red line.
Yeah, absolutely. I got one more thing, Rick.
You got time.
Okay, good. This was from the Consumer Advice on Money and Health. It says 1 in 10 Americans now takes an antidepressant medicine. Among women in their 40s and 50s, the figure is 1 in 4.
Are they married? My guess is yes.
Well, you know, it is a staggering amount of
depressed people
on medication.
Yeah, absolutely.
To the point where we know this, and we've talked about this before, affects the water supply.
Right.
That is, people who are on these antidepressants, they pee, and they pee the medicine out, and the filters that we use in our water treatment plants do not, in fact, filter out the medications. They're to remove out bacteria and things like that, but they do not remove medications. Fish are exposed to rather large amounts of antidepressant medicines. Odd thing.
It's no wonder they quit biting.
Right. I mean, insert joke here. But also, people downstream are exposed to antidepressant medicines as well. An article in the April Journal of Psychotherapy and Psychosomatics found that nearly two-thirds of a sample of 5,000 patients who had been given a diagnosis of depression within the previous 12 months did not meet criteria for a major depressive episode. Now, I don't really get too excited about that. We use these antidepressants. The FDA has approved these antidepressant medicines for a lot of things like obsessive compulsive disorder, a disorder where people compulsively pull out their hair, some types of anxiety and social phobia disorders and so forth. So the fact that they don't necessarily have a diagnosis of major depression is not the issue. But boy, oh boy, we are using a lot of these medications.
You know, I don't even know where to go with that, Tony. I mean, there's a red line there somewhere. I just don't know where it is.
Yep. We have crossed several red lines, and now it is time to cross the red line of leaving our show. Rick, can you get us out of here?
I sure can. Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hazoda and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is used with other radio shows to treat Parkinson's disease. Health Matters allows the medication to last longer in the system so that it doesn't wear off before the next show.
Many people hearing our show may develop serious side effects, but with frequent visits to your doctor, this risk can be minimized. Your urine may turn brownish-orange. This effect is really harmless.
Tell your doctor immediately if any of these unlikely but serious side effects occur.
Unusual urges, such as increased gambling or sexual urges.
Uh-oh. Mental changes, such as confusion and hallucinations.
Muscle stiffness.
And persistent diarrhea.
This show may make you dizzy or drowsy. Do not drive, use machinery, or do any activity that requires alertness until you are sure you can perform such activities safely.
Avoid alcoholic beverages. Older adults may be more sensitive to the side effects of Health Matters, especially drowsiness and confusion.
Do not share this radio show with others. Laboratory and medical tests, such as liver function tests, should be performed periodically to monitor your progress and check for side effects. Consult your doctor for more details.
Do not store Health Matters in the bathroom. Keep all radio shows away from children and pets. Do not flush our show down the toilet like we do, or into the drain unless instructed to do so.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.